maps from every book I've read. The worlds that I have lived inside my head. I thought a love like theirs could never die. If it can fade away, then so can I. If first you see me, then you don't. Don't look for me.
No, I won't
even be there. So let the games begin. 'Cause I just don't feel at home in mine. So I'll slip down into someone else's skin.
If Catch Me If You Can sounds familiar, that's because it's the title of Steven Spielberg's hit movie from 2002, and that was before it was reinvented as a rollicking musical by the team behind Hairspray. It's based on the real-life story of a teenage con man who passed himself off as a pilot, doctor, and lawyer, and it stars Aaron Tveit as the con man, Frank Abagnale Jr. Also, Tom Wopat plays his father, Frank Abagnale Sr., and they are both here to talk about Catch Me If You Can, which is at the Neil Simon Theater on West 52nd Street. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much.
Thanks for having us.
How familiar were you with the story before you became involved in the musical? I'm assuming you both saw the movie first?
I have never seen the movie, the whole thing. I've seen bits and pieces, and I was not really that aware of it. But when I was presented with the project, the character of the father is a kind of a pivotal guy, and especially the idea that Christopher Walken played in the film,
and he can sing too.
And dance.
He's
a big time dancer.
Heck of a dancer.
He's a lot better dancer than I am. But I like to think I can hold my own singing.
I did see the movie.
You and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Me and Leo, I guess. Yeah, I saw it in the movie theater. I think in 2001 or 2002 when it came out. You know, I've been a fan of DiCaprio for a long time, and so I think I remember. Yeah, I went and saw it in the movie theater, and I've seen it on and off since I've been working on it. Tom and I have both been working on the show for a long time, so it's on. It seems it's one of those things where I think it's on TV once a month on TBS or TNT or something. So it's always
ubiquitous.
I always see it around. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that there are so many musicals that began as feature films on Broadway. Right now, we have Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, Billy Elliot, The Lion King, Sister Act. Now this. Are there any potential hazards of doing this kind of adaptation rather than creating something from scratch?
I'm not sure there are all that many things that are created really from scratch. Mm-hmm. I mean, even with, you know, the Rodgers and Hammerstein, most of that stuff came from books or plays.
South Pacific, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
And so to the idea of writing a musical from scratch, I guess maybe Music Man was mm-hmm. from scratch. But I think most things have a derivation from an earlier media or earlier art form.
Yeah, and I think the pitfalls for anything is, you know, if you kind of, I mean, the theater and musical theater especially is a completely different medium of storytelling than film or, you know, even a book. So I think that the success and failure kind of lies in how you tell that story in a different way for this medium. You know,
well, in this case, we're talking about something that's very much about the chase.
Yeah.
And you can't do the chase on the stage is the way you can in
yeah,
a movie.
Exactly.
An action musical.
Yeah. So you change the emphasis here.
Yeah.
A little, yeah. I mean, a lot of the chase happens off stage, but I think that the key here is that we've made the most of the strengths of theater in that the visual aspects of it, the emotional aspects mm-hmm. of it, the immediacy of seeing this stuff happen on stage, and the, you know, the gradual coming together of the kid and the FBI agent is, I mean, that's the tension that really drives the show.
Yeah, and we kind of, you know, this, I think, you know, it's told through, we tell the story through this early television hullabaloo, Ed Sullivan show kind of device. But really what we're trying to focus on stage is this almost triangle between Tom and I as father and son and then, you know, Norbert Lee Butz's character as Carl Hanratty and kind of the our relationship, father and son, starting very high and going downhill, and then finding a kind of a pseudo father and son relationship between Frank and Carl. So that's really what our show, I think, focuses on.
Because one of the important things is that Frank Jr. is a teenager
yeah.
when he's doing so
unbelievable.
Much of
yeah.
He's able to pull off all of this stuff, but he really does still need some kind of
yeah.
sense of family, and
yeah,
he's,
I mean,
alone
he's a
much
kid.
Of the time.
Yeah, he's a lonely kid at 16 out in the world by himself.
He ends up giving himself up when he's, what, 20, 21?
Yeah. Yeah. Something?
I mean,
and he's already been a pilot,
yeah.
a lawyer,
yeah, yeah.
a doctor.
Unbelievable.
He must have. Have you met Frank Abagnale?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, his name's Frank Abagnale Jr., and he came. He's come to see us several times during our workshops, and then also while we've had the production up.
Did he offer any tips?
You know, one of the main things he likes to say is that he knows that that's a remarkable story, what happened to him before he turned 21. But he thinks that the fact that he has a regular life now, and he actually works for the FBI.
Yeah, for 35 years.
He really reclaimed his life and reinvented himself as a kind of a model citizen. He thinks that's actually a bigger story in itself.
Yeah, he thinks he's mentioned that it's, you know, he says only in a country like America can you get that kind of second chance to really reinvent your life. And I mean, for me, you know, as an actor playing somebody who's right there, I mean, the kind of the overwhelming thing I got from him is he was just trying to survive when he was out on his own. He wasn't trying.
There was no plan.
Yeah,
whatsoever.
He wasn't trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. It wasn't malicious. He was really just trying to figure out how to get by on a daily basis.
And he always seemed to be just one step ahead of the people who were pursuing him because
very creative thinking.
He figured out what he needed to do each time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Jack O'Brien, who directed this production, says that he thought of the songs as the equivalent of a movie's close-ups.
Interesting.
Oh, that's a
great insight.
Because they give us a certain insight into the characters.
Right.
That a close-up of somebody's eyes shifting around might.
Yeah.
I think in musicals, there's a couple of different ways that songs serve. Usually it's either as a comment on the action or it almost promotes the action.
Yeah.
And I think in our case, it's pretty much kind of we take a little breath and a parenthesis and say, here, this is what's going on right now in my head.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's told, I mean, the whole story is told from the point of view of the kid. So that, you know, his father really wasn't this kind of shyster that he comes off as. But in the kid's eyes, he was larger than life, you know. And I say at one point, you know, a combination of Dean Martin, Jesus Christ, and JFK all rolled into one.
Yeah, that's what this kid thinks.
Gives me a lot
dad.
Of latitude.
Yeah.
Well, Aaron, you're on stage almost all the time, and you're singing, you're dancing, acting. It must be exhausting.
It is.
But he's also my center fielder too.
I am.
So are you happy when you get a lot of applause just so you can catch your breath?
You know, it's kind of the most. It's the most mountainous show I've had to climb on a nightly basis, but in the same way, it's also the most rewarding, you know? I mean, sometimes when you do a show and you have a lot of downtime off stage, it tends to drag. And, you know, I have to say the 2 hours and 35 minutes of our show goes by in a blink of an eye for me because I'm constantly, you know, doing something. And if I'm not on stage, I'm running to a change. And so it goes really fast. And so I personally would prefer that than, you know, kind of sitting around, which I've done before, you know, watching 40 minutes of television in my dressing room. So I'd much rather be on stage.
Yeah, a lot of it in both of your cases requires your acting chops, not just your singing and dancing chops. Mm-hmm. In your case, Frank can be seen as something of an anti-hero, but you have to make him appealing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to sound too grand, but that's the sense of great Shakespearean characters. I mean, Frank is truly an anti-hero, and, you know, I'm not doing morally just things, and I have to fight every night to get the audience on my side and to root for me, even though through those things. And a great thing I love about our show, and I think that, you know, if I do say so, I think we've been able to capture it, is, sure, it is this big, glitzy musical at times, but the scene work that's happening in our show, we really drop into a real realistic.
There's some really visceral scenes.
Yeah, I mean, we're not doing musical theater comedy acting on stage.
But at the same time, you're breaking the wall all the time.
Yeah.
You still refer to the band at one point. The band is on stage the whole time. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's a great energy, too, you know, to have a band like that on stage with us.
And then part of that was definitely a nod to those big musical specials of the 60s and 70s. And we've tried to capture that feel, that ambiance of those television specials, and I think we have.
My guests are Tom Wopat, who plays Frank Abagnale Sr., and Aaron Tveit, who plays Frank Abagnale Jr. in Catch Me If You Can, which is at the Neil Simon Theater on West 52nd Street. It's been nominated for a Tony for Best Musical.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I was talking to Aaron about playing this role. Well, you have to play a character as well who changes in the audience's eyes over the course of the show. And I thought even your singing voice changed over the course of the show as
he goes
into decline.
Well, I think that one of the things that I enjoy about what I do is to really try to recognize my position in the piece. And I think that the father, in this case, serves as a catalyst for the son several times. He kind of enables the son initially to at least think about this kind of audacity that he gets away with.
He's almost telling him how to be a con man without being a con man.
And then, you know, the son comes back and sees the father in a little bit of a decline towards the end of the first act and picks him up in that song Butter Out of Cream, which is kind of our anthem. Mm. And then in the second act, I mean, you see the son come back and see the father in a totally decayed state. And you see that kind of actually frees the son to think about a new life with this woman he's found, and also his relationship with the FBI agent takes a new step in that way. So I get to perform a pretty valuable function, and it's also a really nice, it's a very satisfying dramatic arc.
Well, it takes place in 63, 64, when the Beatles are the most dominant group, but this is not Beatles-type music. It is kind of music of the times.
Mm. And there's a lot of different genres. I think the kid sees his father as a Dean Martin. So I get to do a lot of big swing stuff. The stuff that Norbert does is a little more patter oriented, and then Aaron gets.
I kind of get to do some
huge ballads
and some early Stones rock. You know, the first couple songs and some great ballads at the end. And Carrie Butler sings a great song called "Fly, Fly Away." That's kind of a very early Supremes girl group song, you know, and but that time in music, you know, it's, people have called it the greatest kind of time in our American musical.
Well, there was a lot
history,
of range,
you know, so many things, you know, so many different styles were, you know, all in the pop music, under the pop music umbrella, you know, at the time. So.
Fortunately for us, our composer and lyricist, that combo, they're extremely glib in all
genres.
Well,
they did Hairspray. Oh.
Yeah, amazing stuff.
But you've been in this production a long time before it ever hit Broadway.
I like to say when I started, I was the kid. started like 6 years ago.
Does that help? Because so many shows these days. In the past, shows used to go all around and they'd do Philadelphia and Boston, whatever, and they would fine-tune.
We did an out-of-town run in Seattle a couple of summers ago.
Yeah, 2009.
And basically what that informed was what we didn't want to do with the show. The show changed quite remarkably since then. But I think one of the things that's really valuable is through that process, you're constantly condensing. And so I think Aaron will agree with me that there's a lot of that scene work that we did in earlier productions or earlier workshops that's still in the back of our head, you know, in the scenes that we do now.
So that helped you develop the character.
Oh, sure, absolutely. You don't have, so you're getting more condensed but a really intense version.
Yeah, the scenes get cut down, you know, all the work that, you know, Tom and I have done together and on these parts, you know, through the years, I mean, they're still there in our heads and we can still kind of play that every night.
Well, Aaron, you'd been asked to sing numbers as Frank from very early on as the production was developing, but then you weren't asked for the formal auditions. That had to have been crushing.
Yeah, you know, I first came across this music and this production in 2005 when I got cast in Hairspray, actually. And then I was very young, though, and I, you know, Hairspray was only my second professional gig, and I kind of spent the next 2 years, a year and a half, auditioning a couple times for it and not getting the role. And then in 2007, I finally, you know, at the end of like 2007, when it became 2008, they asked me to play Frank after. So, but that was great too for me, you know, because I felt I was finally ready, and it was kind of a nice journey to get there for me.
And you said you were in Hairspray, also Next to Normal. Mm-hmm. And then you and Norbert Lee Butz have both been in different productions of Rent and Wicked.
Yeah.
So this is almost like an incestuous thing. Tom, it's hard to believe the trajectory of your career since the Dukes of Hazzard.
I'm not sure I want to go there.
When you were there hot rodding, were you thinking I'd rather be in a musical?
Well, I actually did a show. I did a Cy Coleman musical right before I got Dukes. I did a show called I Love My Wife back in 78. And then shortly after Dukes went off the air, I was in town doing a show called Olympus on My Mind, an off-Broadway show, which was hysterical. And then I came back in 91 to do City of Angels. So I've always, you know, I've always kind of kept my hand in it. That was really where my experience was.
And now you pretty much concentrate on this when you're not
pretty
on
much,
the farm.
Yeah. I do.
Sondheim on Sondheim, Chicago, 42nd Street, Andy, Get Your Gun.
You know, the thing that's been the most important to me probably was the Glengarry Glen Ross 5 years ago. That really opened up a whole new avenue for me as far as dramatic acting went, which I never thought was going to be a strength. But fortunately, it's worked out quite well.
Tom Wopat and Aaron Tveit, two of the stars of Catch Me If You Can at the Neil Simon Theater, 250 West 52nd Street. For ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. And again, congratulations on the nomination for a Tony for Best Musical. We're going out with you, Tom, singing Pinstripes Are All They See. By the way, Tom will be performing with his band live at Birdland on June 20th, and there's a new CD called Consider It Swung.
A little bit of attitude.
The dirt and to breathe. Yes, those ladies gave thanks to us.